Have you ever felt like you've got more in the tank and you know that there's more potential in you, especially in business? Jack came to set the standard and he ended up tripling his business within a couple of months. He has an email marketing company. Some of the tools and the tactics and the mindsets that we teach every 2 to 3 weeks in a free mindset webinar. This is an invite to you to come to that webinar. Just click the link below. It's the first link in the description and I'd love to see you guys there. Can't wait.
Hi everyone, thank you so much for joining in to another podcast episode. I'd like to introduce to you and welcome to you guys Sean Stafford, who is a WBFF world champion and is a fitness cover model and a business owner who has traveled all around the world promoting and doing fitness. I would also like to let you guys know that, well, if you haven't already, that I have joined with Eternum Labs, and Eternum Labs have two new products available that have just released, and one is called Zen and one is called Zone. Zen has an advanced sleep formula which is full of all these different types of ingredients, including 3 different types of magnesium and a whole bunch of different nootropics, which actually help you get a really good deep sleep, REM sleep, and wake up feeling energetic. We've literally had people who don't have really good sleep take Zen and just been like zonked out all night and woken up feeling amazing. It's like, yes, yes, yes. The other product is Zone, and Zone is literally a non-stimulant product that sort of is a replacement to having a coffee. Anytime you need energy, anytime you need memory, anytime you need focus, get into a workflow, or really need to think about something, Zone is perfect for you for that. It essentially has all of the juice that your brain needs in order to sprint, basically. And if you guys want to know where to find those, you can go to eternumlabs.com.au. Make sure you got the .au there, and you can use the discount code Corey to get 10% off. Only the podcast listeners get that discount. I'd also like to let you guys know that if you've seen my stories or you've seen any of my podcast stuff, as you know that you're well aware that I'm obsessed with cooking, meal preps, and finding different ingredients that I can use to enhance my nutrition and make my food prep so much easier. And if you don't know already, I have an ebook. You can go onto my website or go into the link in my DMs or the link in my bio on my Instagram to purchase that ebook. If you go onto the website, you have to scroll down and make sure you go onto the blog and you should be able to find it there. If not, go to my Instagram bio. I also have linked it down below in this podcast episode, so you can find that and get the ebook there if you need it. Furthermore, if you are interested in any of my coaching, you're like, what does actually Corey do for coaching? Basically, what I do is anything possible to help someone. If you know that you're on a journey and you've sort of started to have some success, you've started to crush things in life, and now you're sort of ready to really invest in yourself and develop yourself and become better, whether that be through health, energy, optimizing yourself, biohacking, mindset, philosophy, becoming more spiritual, learning meditation, learning a whole bunch of different skills and how to prioritize yourself or others, optimize your relationships, then I would extremely recommend you to DM me on Instagram, just messaging me saying health. Otherwise, you can always try to book in a call through me if I have time. On my website, you can go through and book a call through there. But if you're just interested and just want to like sort of understand what's actually happening, just go onto my Instagram and DM me health. So now, guys, without further ado, I'd like to start this podcast with Sean Stafford. I'm extremely excited to share this with you. And the rest of the podcast is uninterrupted. So please sit back, enjoy, and listen to the whole thing. Big love, guys, and see you in the next one. G'day, everyone. Welcome back to the podcast. And today I am here with Sean Stafford. Just a little introduction on him. He is a 2-times world champion in the fitness competitions. He is a founder of City Athletic. He has qualifications in the PICPL3. He has also got qualifications in the Poliquin biosignature. He has an MA at Oxford University. He is an international fitness
man of mystery. International man of mystery.
Yeah. I mean, I've seen you on like the cover of like every single magazine, I swear to God.
Maybe there's not so much mystery anymore.
Yeah, maybe not anymore. We know who you are. We can find you. He's a sponsored athlete and a fitness competitor. He's also an amazing dad and a family man, and he has a really good educational Instagram. So if you haven't seen Sean's Instagram, I highly recommend actually going down and checking it out, because yeah, he's putting out awesome content every single day.
Thank you, mate.
So yeah, man, how do you do it all?
Very good question. I think it's being perennially tired.
Yeah.
But it's that's the thing, as in I was having a quite an interesting conversation with one of my business partners not that long ago, and he was saying that his life is kind of split into 8 hours of work, 8 hours of sleep, and then he kind of has 8 hours of play where he does a lot of cricket, does a lot of squash, socializes a lot with friends, all that sort of stuff. Whereas he said, I'm more like 12 hours of work, 4 hours or 2 hours of family, 2 hours of something else, and then 8 hours of sleep. So he was like, it's I don't do much else apart from work, family, and sleep, but that's all right.
Hey, well, it's not too bad. I guess you're passionate about it, so you're sort of blessed to be able to do something that you love, right?
And I think you kind of hit the nail on the head. I think it's a massive cliche to say that if you love what you do, you never work a day in your life, because, you know, if you're a PT or you're working in a gym or, you know, it definitely still does feel like work. But I think we probably also are in a position where you can genuinely get a lot of joy from your work and a lot of sort of fulfillment from your work. And sometimes going to work doesn't feel too bad. Like, we're not working in a coal mine or anything. Do you know what I mean? We're going to a gym where we're helping people. We're talking to really interesting people. And, you know, you're surrounded by that kind of physical culture where you're just in there vibing off each other. Good times, no complaints.
Yeah, for sure. I'd also like to know, like, how you got started and what were sort of like the tipping points that like really got you in the industry and started you to like really start to succeed in your journey.
Do you know what? I think it was a little bit of luck, actually, probably more than a little bit of luck. So I actually started my fitness career just in a local gym back home. And it was one of those ones where I just kind of signed professional terms to play rugby, but I was painfully skinny. So it was one of those ones where I was, to put it into perspective, I was like, I'm 6 foot one. So I'm 183, 184 tall. And I weighed 68 kilos. Right. And then bear in mind, I was like 18. So I was one of those very tall, very fast, very skinny guys. And our rugby coach said that he thinks it would be a good idea if I went into the weights room and just tried to strengthen up a little bit. And so And so I kind of went to my local gym. I just finished my A-level. So I just finished high school and I got an A-level in sports science. And I said, hey, I've got an A-level in sports science. You might as well give me a job. I'm going to be in here a lot. And the guy was like, okay. So he gave me a job and I went in and I kind of trained before my shift. I would work my full 8 hour shift on the gym floor, cleaning, front of house, all that crap. And then I would train again afterwards. And kind of in that first 3 month off season where I first had a job in the gym, I went from like 68 kilos to like 85 kilos.
Ooh.
Just blew up. Like, my body just loved the gym and it kind of never really looked back. And then I kind of stayed with that gym, got qualified whilst I was at university, kept working as a PT in the holidays. And then it was one of those ones where it came to that junction in your life where you got a choice to make, right? You can either keep doing what you're doing if you're enjoying it, or you can go and get a real job. And I thought, do you know what? I'm actually just going to keep doing what I'm doing. Like, the money was pretty good. You know, as you know, if you're a young kid, personal trainers, if you're busy, you can make good money. So I thought, you know what, I'm just going to stick this out for a bit and see where it goes.
What was the hardest part of making the decision for that?
I think probably the hardest thing was that I probably would have always set myself up to do something different. Do you know what I mean? Like, I probably would have, if you'd asked me years before that what I was going to be, I wouldn't have said a trainer. I would have said a lawyer, a banker, something like that, you know, a doctor, something a little bit more, I don't know, maybe highbrow or, you know, education, you know, educate, that sort of stuff. So, you know, a trainer back in the day was kind of someone that wasn't really good at anything else. So they did sport and then they kind of ended up being a trainer, right? So I don't know. I think it was coming to that point where, you know, I just thought, what do I actually enjoy doing? What do I want to kind of do right now? And it's what's paying me some good money. And I thought, I'm just going to see where this personal training thing goes. And whatever I do, I'm going to try my best at whatever it is I decide. So PT it was.
Yeah. And then like, where did you go from there in terms of like your journey sort of getting into the fitness competition, the cover modeling, and now to like a point now where you like make a real big impact, you help a lot of people, and you like influence a lot of people too?
I think it was, so there are two different things. So I moved to London. So I left my hometown gym and moved to the big city, and started working in a gym right in the middle of London. Mm. And it went really, really well. And a couple of years into that, I kind of decided that it would be a good opportunity to kind of build my own gym business. So I got to work with a partner, and we kind of put a business plan together, raised a load of money, went out and built like a really cool gym right in the center of town. Mm. And kind of at the same sort of time, I just finished playing rugby, and I thought I need something else to do. So that's when sort of men's physique and fitness modeling was just coming around. And one of my colleagues said, why don't you do this thing called like men's physique? I think you'd be quite good at it. And I said, yeah, all right, I've got nothing else to do. We'll do it as a bet. We'll see who does better. we entered like a local show, which was the British Championships. She ended up winning the bikini category. I ended up winning the fitness category. That got us an invitation to the Europeans, which was like 6 months later. So I thought, well, I might as well. It's in Iceland. I've never been to Iceland. Went and did that, ended up winning that competition, and that got me my pro card. Mm. So it was one of those things where very, very quickly it went from sort of zero to hero. And then 8 months after that in Toronto, Canada, there was the Pro World Championships. And I thought, well, in for a penny, in for a pound. Mm-hmm. And I entered that and ended up winning that as well. So within 18, yeah, mate, it was a pretty steep climb. yeah. And so from within 18 months of start, like having never entered a show before in my life, I was the pro fitness world champion for the WBFF. And the whole time, I think what kind of really helped was the whole time I was on Facebook, and I was, every workout I would do, I would load it up onto Facebook. I'd make these little videos and write all the programs out, and I'd just whack it up on my Facebook page. And kind of in that 18 months between, you know, being a broken gym guy in London to being sort of pro male fitness model world champion, I was posting day in, day out, so consistent. And I went from having probably zero followers to having close to a million followers in that 18 months. And it was Facebook, right? It was before Instagram. It was all that kind of stuff. And it just kind of went zoom. Yeah. And I'd say that having the combination of being a trainer, posting kind of value-based content, and then it sort of dovetailing with the success of winning the competitions, I'd say that's probably how I got started.
Nice. That is like so crazy that happened in like such a short period of time. Like I find that like absolutely fascinating, because I only got my pro card.
And I opened my gyms in that 18 months ago as well.
Yeah. That's like, and prepping for three shows like at that same time, like people are like, just if you haven't prepped before for like any sort of fitness competition, like that sort of takes up your whole entire life for
it can do, yeah,
3 to 5 months, and then like at the same time starting a business, doing those other things is just crazy. And like I'm not sure if anyone's ever tried, if you're listening, to try the whole influencer path, but even like doing a post, it takes up like, you know, a decent post, creating it and like changing all the things around, it takes like an hour, like every single day. So like, yeah, that's like super impressive that you had sort of all the ingredients to make like the best recipe.
It was, as I said, I think a lot of it, the content creation side back then was different, because it wasn't so visual. It wasn't so like, everybody now is a content creator rather than a, you know, so everything has to be super high end, you know, the attention to detail and everything, and almost like the angle and the preparation that goes into posting on social media now is very different to kind of what it was. We're talking what, maybe 10 years ago, you know, it was grainy selfies on like a Nokia phone. It was horrible. You know what I mean? But it was just getting content up, and people were just chewing it. Very, very different to what it is now, because I think when you're talking about social media, the algorithms now are very, very geared towards generating revenue, right? Whereas back in the day, sort of 10 years ago, it was very organic. It was very authentic. You could post something, and if people are following you, chances are they'll see it. Whereas I think it's a bit of a different game now. So I was going to say, the thing with the social media was it was just about being consistent. Like, I knew that if I did a workout, I'd take a photo afterwards, post it up, job done. And that was it. And it'd take 10 minutes. Whereas now, now the posts are like, you hire a videographer and, you know, you got to get the right lighting. And then, yeah, it's a different game now, right?
Yeah, it is. Yeah, it's a lot more competitive, I should say. But like, yeah. But I guess there's a lot more people that are out on social media, and they can choose who they want to follow as well, which I think is quite amazing. So from there,
I think a lot more people are making money off of it now as well. Do you know what I mean? Like everybody is, you know, wanting to be a six-figure trainer, or they're, you know, they've got their app to promote, or they're, you know, getting a meal prep company or a protein company that are, you know, looking at their insights and stuff. So I think a lot more people are using social media to hustle a living, whereas kind of back then and kind of to a degree now, my main income comes from one-to-one working with people in gyms, now owning gyms. It's a different ball game. So I'm not kind of like on that super hustle influencer train, which I know a lot of people are, and I know a lot of people, it really stresses them out.
Yeah, it does, man. It can be a little bit stressful, that's for sure. So then once you won Worlds, you went back and competed again?
Yeah. So I did three World Championships in a row.
Yep.
So I did 2012 in Toronto, which was good. Then I did 2013 in Vegas, which was not so good. So I actually, I got bitten by a spider, believe this or not. I was at a wedding in Italy. And I got bitten by a spider and got a blood infection about 6 weeks before the show. So not great.
What?
But and then I went back to England. And when I was in hospital for this blood infection, I got, you know, MRSA, MRSA.
Haven't heard like of it, but I'm assuming it's...
It's a super bug. So it's like a super bug that flies around hospitals. And so basically I had diarrhea for like 2 weeks straight.
Oh, no.
It was horrible. It was genuinely horrible.
But it shredded
up. Well, I dropped. It did. It absolutely did. But it was, you know, there's no weren't training my energy levels, and it just kind of really messed me up a little bit. And in hindsight, I 100% should have pulled out of that competition. Like I was coming from a point of I'd never lost the show at that point. So every show I entered, I'd won. And I was probably a little bit delusional, and the people around me were kind of saying, "Nah, you look good. You know, trying to give me confidence and trying to pump my tires up." When I think if I look back and with a little bit of hindsight, I probably should have said, "Guys, I've been really sick. This isn't the show for me. But for me, I'd already committed to competing and committed to defending my title. So I was in. So I rocked up and I came third in the Worlds. But looking back, I think they'd probably done me a solid. Do you know what I mean? Like I think they probably knew that I'd had a really shit time and that I'd still stepped up there and given it my best. And I think they probably thought, you know what? He's probably in fifth, but we're going to give him third because he's committed to it and he's gone through with it. I came third in 2013. Mm-hmm. And then having that first taste of defeat made me then literally the day after the show, I was back in the gym and I was on it and I had the perfect prep. Like it was a year and I timed it perfectly. And I turned up in Vegas again in 2014 and was a different animal.
Nice. Yeah. I
think I probably even got a perfect scorecard or something ridiculous. It was, you know, I've never looked like that and I will never look like that again. But that was it. Regained the world championships and then kind of retired.
Yeah. I actually really like that. In terms of just like, you know, wisdom for anyone, if they're learning, wanted to take anything out of that, because because you actually sort of got defeated, it like super motivated you in terms of sort of like it just dissolves your ego for a little bit. And then you've come back and you've like dedicated like a full year to train like your best and your hardest to come back. Yeah. And like, I'm going to absolutely crush this goal, send it off. And then hello, cover model shoots everywhere on the magazines. We see Sean.
You say it dissolved my ego. It probably didn't dissolve my ego. It probably did the worst thing for my ego. It probably dented my ego to a point where I couldn't accept it.
Yeah. Every day he's just waking up crying, eating egg whites. Like it's happening.
Yeah. But no, it was good, isn't it? And it's one of those things where, you know, you leave nothing on the table in life, right? You go out there and you do your best and the chips fall where they fall. And I think I said to my wife at the time, I was like, if I never step on stage again, like I'm happy with how that went and that chapter of my life, I'm super happy. I competed as a pro for like what, 4 or 5 years. And I was like, you know what? It's time to move on and do other things. And also I was a lot older than a lot of the competitors in men's physique. Like what was I when I retired? I was probably 32, yeah, maybe 32. Whereas, you know, a lot of the guys coming through were early 20s, and it was just one of those. I thought, you know what, the time was right, and it was time to move on and do something else.
Yeah. So, what do you think were the biggest lessons that you learned from that whole competing journey?
I think it's a good question. I think something along the lines of, you don't exist in a bubble. Do you know what I mean? And I think a lot of competitors think they do. And I think the impact of going through something like fitness competitions and that sort of stuff, I think it takes its toll, not necessarily on you mentally and physically, but I think on your ecosystem more than you think. So I think your friends, your family, your colleagues, your business partners, I think, the impact it has on those people and those groups is more significant than you think. And you're so focused on what you're dealing with that you're not really focusing and investing in necessarily what they're dealing with. And I think I became more aware of that in the last couple of years of competing than I was at the start. So I think that's absolutely, if you're thinking about going into competing and you're thinking about sort of having a career in fitness and in bodybuilding and that sort of stuff, that's definitely something you should be aware of. But also, like, genuinely, it's just quite a bit of fun. Mm-hmm. Like it is, like if you get a lot of enjoyment out of that side of life, it, you know, pushing yourself and challenging yourself, and the camaraderie amongst the dudes that I was competing with and even the girls, like it was a lot of fun. Like it was genuinely a good time in life where you got to travel around the world. You got to catch up with people from all different cultures, all different nationalities, you know, Aussies, you know, Americans, Brazilians, Europeans. Like it was just a good old time. Like that's kind of like that golden period where we were doing the expos and it was just, you know, you get treated like a rock star wherever you go. It was just a really good time of life. I kind of miss that part of life.
Just a little bit of the wildness there with all of that. Yeah, I like that.
Yeah, it's good times.
Yeah. So what projects are you like mainly focusing on now?
So now the my main focus at the moment is, obviously I have a health club business here in central London. We've got two clubs. Obviously the last 18 months has been fairly crazy in terms of like being shut down with COVID. So that's pretty much ripped the guts out of our business. So, you know, it's thrown what was a profitable business into something that's basically hanging on by a thread. And my business partner is Australian, and it's kind of, this whole 18 months kind of took the wind out of his sails, and he's remarried now and he's emigrated back to Australia, or he's emigrating back to Australia. So he's left the business, kind of leaving it to me to be sole managing director. So my kind of focus has to be on that and on my staff and driving the business back to some level of profitability. I have loads of other things going on. So I work, do you know Ghost Lifestyle?
Yes.
You know, Ghost, the sports nutrition brand.
Yes.
So two of my really good mates set up Ghost 5 years ago, primarily a US based company. Yeah. And we kind of made an agreement sort of five, 6 years ago in a nightclub in Lisbon that that when Ghost was at a stage when it was going to turn into a global business, that they would give me a call and they'd bring me into the family in an official way to kind of grow the team on a global level. So since December, I joined the team at Ghost, and I'm kind of heading up their overseas division to try and grow the brand in EU, in Europe, and in Australia. So that's kind of what I'm tasked with at the moment. Yeah. So lots of things going on.
Yeah. Firstly, how did that conversation in a nightclub in Lisbon even go down?
Well, so Ryan at the time was, so Ryan, who's the CMO, he was currently, at the time, he was the athlete ambassador for BSN. Mm-hmm. And I was with Optimum, and they're owned by the same company. So they're owned by Glanbia. So we were kind of like, we were all always traveling together. And Ryan's best mate, Dan, who's now the CEO of Ghost, he was working for Cellucor, and they were hatching the idea to start their own brand. And it was, you know, we were in this nightclub called Urban Beach, and it was 4 a.m. and we just had a mad steak, and we'd just been working this crazy expo called Portugal Fit. And, you know, a couple of bottles of rum in, and they were talking about this Ghost and how amazing this ghost brand is going to be and what's going to make it different. And I was just kind of like, whenever you're ready to grow it globally and you want to come over to the UK, give me a call. And then obviously the time was right in December, and it kind of just happened. I think we almost stole a taxi that night. we were quite drunk, but I think what happened is we were in a taxi back to our hotel at like 4 a.m. Mm-hmm. And the taxi driver got pulled over by the police. So he got out of the taxi to like answer questions and do whatever he was doing. And I think either myself or Dan, I can't remember which one of us, jumped out and got in the driver's seat and pretended to drive off, which the police, I don't think, found very funny. So yeah, that was an interesting night. It was a good night in Lisbon.
Oh man, the things that happen on the road when you're at the fitness.
Mate, what goes on tour stays on tour. Until you do a podcast.
Yeah, there we go. Like the censored one. Like, oops. I love that. That's awesome. So what do you think would be, like, for you, what do you think were some of the biggest, like, struggles in terms of all the things that were happening in your journey that you had to overcome?
I think injuries, which I think is probably what a lot of people can relate to. Like, there's a, you know, you'll know from being in the gym, and if you've played sport, you know, you pick up niggles. You know, I fell off my bike on the way to work once, and it pretty much has ruined the last 10 years of my life body wise. Like, I've, you know, done my neck, my teeth, my shoulder, my lower back, everything kind of from this one bike crash. And it kind of just compounds itself so that you're never really in a position where you can properly give it your all. And I think the only one time I've had the perfect prep was in 2014, where I didn't pick up a single injury the entire year. And it was amazing. Every other prep I've ever had has been, you know, catastrophic injuries that you just deal with, right? As in, everybody plays hurt. And it's just one of those ones where I think you build up a resilience to adversity. Like, you get used to things not going 100% to plan. And you just have to develop that inner resilience to be able to work around it, to adapt and to keep on your path, and to be very blinkered, very sort of laser focused in the face of adversity to try and get that result that you're working towards. So I'd say that's probably one of the biggest lessons, is that, you know, life is going to throw you some lemons, so you might as well make some lemonade while you're there.
Yeah, straight up. No, I absolutely love that. And what do you think would have been for you, besides the WBFF competitions, what do you think was like the biggest transition point for you within your career?
In my career, it's an interesting one. Probably, I'd say probably the biggest transition point would have been probably when I signed for Optimum. So I signed for Optimum Nutrition back in 2013.
How did that come about?
So basically, you know, do you know who Steve Cook is?
Yes.
So Steve was kind of like the poster boy for Optimum on the global level. He was like Mr. America. He's Captain America of the Optimum team. And they were kind of looking to basically grow and diversify the roster of athletes. And I met Steve once in Spain when we were both working in Expo. And we just got on quite well. And the brand manager of Optimum at the time thought, you guys have really good chemistry, just like two dudes, similar sort of age, similar sort of vibe. He's American, you're English. I think that would be quite a good double act.
Mm.
And she basically just said, do you want to come and work for Optimum? And I was kind of like, sure. And basically they basically said, you and Steve are going to travel the world doing all the expos for Optimum. And I was like, amazing. Let's go. And it was just, that was probably the biggest tipping point for me of kind of like, oh shit, this is, you can do this for a living. Like you can go from every 6 weeks, kind of you're on the road, you're going to Sydney or you're going to Mumbai or you're going to, you know, Shanghai or you're going to, you know, Vegas or you're going to Ohio or you're going to Chicago or you're going to Berlin or you're going to London, you know, you just, dotting around the world, just basically being treated like a rock star, talking fitness and meeting fans of the brand, talking about sports nutrition and just producing content on social media. And that was kind of like the first time when, you know, Optimum, who, you know, the biggest brand in sports nutrition, probably even still now, apart from MyProtein. But, you know, that was probably the tipping point where I was kind of like, you know what, this is actually pretty serious. This could be legit a thing.
Yeah, and I'm sure traveling the world with Steve would have been like the worst time ever.
It was so much fun. Like he's over here at the moment. He's over here in the UK at the moment. We've caught up quite a bit. It's one of those things where like we could not talk for 6 months and yet you pick up the phone and it's literally like you haven't missed a beat. It's good fun. We still catch up. We went out for, I think one of his first nights back in the UK, we went out for dinner, went on the double date with his fiance and my wife. We left the kids with a babysitter and it was just, mate, Once you get a few drinks in, it's just the good times.
The best nights ever. So how did you, by the way, like maintain a fitness physique whilst you were traveling like and doing all of those different shows? Because that would have been like, you know, every 5 to 6 weeks you go into like a new country, you're in a new time zone. It's like, how did you do that?
It's not as hard as it sounds. Genetically, I'd say I'm pretty gifted. It's one of those things where I probably have a bit of a head start on 90% of people that would try to do this, just because I've been a good sportsman throughout my early life and
you build up
even till So like I think genetically I'm probably slightly more gifted than your average bloke. And then it's just when you're traveling around, like, and you know, your job is to train and look good. And yeah, you're tired, but they put time into your schedule where you know, you get to train, you get to eat well, and it's kind of part of your job. So it's, you know, it's not as hard as it sounds, like, you know, traveling around the world, because there's always a gym, there's always good food. And it's just about, you know, keeping to as much of a routine as you can. And the thing is, we all love training, right? So it's one of those things where training's the easy bit. It's the try not to eat all the ice cream that's the problem.
yeah for sure. And I think obviously starting off being like someone who was really tall and skinny and having those like jeans to like keep the fat off would definitely help as well.
I'm naturally not a fatty, if that makes sense. Like I'd say naturally I would be skinnier than, for me it would be I'd have to work to keep the muscle on rather than to stop myself getting fat.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, I'm sort of like the opposite. I got to work really hard to keep the fat off all of the time. And when I'm like, if I compete and there's like multiple shows in a row, it's like, oh God, how am I going to keep this off for the whole time? Because I just want to binge and eat everything afterwards. So yeah, 100% get that, which makes so
much. Where are you based in Australia?
So I'm in South Australia, Adelaide, which is like,
Adelaide.
Like you got like Queensland, Sydney, Melbourne, around those, and like Adelaide's like down.
Man, I've been to Adelaide.
Have you?
I've been to Adelaide. I have, yeah. Yeah, we like, is that Port Lincoln's not far away? Is Port Lincoln in Adelaide?
Port Lincoln's in Adelaide, but it's sort of in South Australia, right. Nowhere near Adelaide.
Right. It's right the way down, isn't it? We have been to Adelaide. I'm surprised
you went to Port Lincoln. They got like the shark diving there.
That's exactly what we did.
Is that what you did? Did you jump off a boat?
We saw one, but it was such an anticlimax. Oh. It was literally just like went past, and that was it. There was nothing.
No coming at the cage or anything. You're like, nah, damn
nothing,
it.
Nothing. And it was an early start, and it was a long boat ride, and it was quite choppy. Do you know what I mean? There was a lot of people vomiting. There's a lot of people being sick. I was all right, but there was a lot of green faces on that boat.
Oh God, that is actually so funny. Oh geez, I love that. So what do you think, like, in terms of people, like, to encourage people that sort of do want to take the fitness journey, for those people that do want to compete, for those people that sort of, you know, want to live that like lifestyle, if you had any encouraging words, like, what would you say to them?
I think a lot of these people, it'd be to take your time with it, as in, and to, a lot of people get obsessive about the result rather than the process, right? So they want to win a championship, or they want to win a show, or they want to get to a certain point without really appreciating the journey of the actual process of getting there. As in, if you can't love the process and you can't love the journey, you're kind of wasting your time, because that is the lion's share of your life. Do you know what I mean? So, you know, if you're taking a 16-week prep, you'll probably look good for about 3 weeks of it. Mm-hmm. Right. And so if you're kind of fixated on that end goal, mm-hmm. rather than just learning about what process you're going through, learning about what impact the training, the nutrition, all that's having on your body and how your body's dealing with it and all that sort of stuff, then you're kind of shortchanging yourself, because 75-80% of the time is not that end result, you know? So I'd say competing isn't for everybody, but everybody should do it at least once. if you know what I mean? If you're into fitness and you're thinking about competing, you should do it at least once. Mm. Just to have been there, to have got the t-shirt, to have tried the vest on and see if it fits, you know, because if you'd asked me, 10 years ago, would I be a bodybuilder? I would have laughed and said, no chance. Like, but it's one of those things where you kind of get into it, and then, you know, it can be quite addictive. It's a bit of a bug, and you know, that constant quest to improve and to get better. And it's something that is completely in your control, right? You're in control of how hard you work. You're in control of how disciplined you are with your diet. So it's one of those things where if you're a little bit of a control freak, like I am, it's one of those sports where, you know, you kind of get in what you, or you get out what you put in, and the way you look is a direct reflection of your actions. So, like, you know, it's no coincidence that you look the way you look. You look the way you look because of your training, because of your discipline, because of your nutrition, because of the whole jigsaw that you've put together. So yeah, I'd say that's definitely, you need to bear that in mind when you're deciding whether or not you want to compete or not.
Yeah, I love that so much. It's sort of like actually testing your control, which is what I sort of wrote down and took out from that, because it's a great opportunity to do so, because it's not just like fitness wise, as you mentioned, it's like it's the diet, it's the mindset. And like, I love how like humbling sort of you could say that it is, because it keeps you really because like obviously if you've been cheating on your diet or cheating on your training program, like it's going to show up. So it's a really good test to see how honest you are as well, which I think is really cool. So another question, because I know you that you're like an extremely proud dad, so I would say besides your kids, what are you most proud of?
That's a good question. Probably my wife. I know it's kind of a bit of a duck because it's still family, but it's just it, without, you know, without being soppy, isn't it? There's always, you know, I'm fully aware that I couldn't do what I do without her, and the amount of joy in my life would not be there if it wasn't for her. So that's absolutely putting the work in on that relationship and making sure that relationship is rock solid. You know, we're very open that we've been married for we've been together nearly 17 years. You know, we've been married for nearly 12 years, and it's one of those ones where it's not easy being married to me, to be honest. And so it's one of those things where, you know, there's a lot of work that goes into it, but from both of us, you know, there's a lot of investment from both of us. You know, we understand that we're both very fiery people, very driven people, and that for that to be like a really harmonious family unit, you know, we've got to do the hard yards as a couple, and we've got to invest in each other and trust each other. So yeah, I'd say what I'm most proud of is the time and effort and love that I put into my family and my relationship over the last sort of 15 plus years.
Yeah, I love that so much. So what do you think are some of the things that you guys do that increase the health of your relationship?
Probably the biggest thing was we have therapy once a month.
I love that so much.
Like couples therapy. It's like it's something we've done for a couple of years now. Whether we, you know, I'm not going to say we don't need it, but we obviously, you know, it's something that we invest the time and we invest the money in every month, just to have a little hour window on Zoom with somebody that we can, you know, have an open forum with, and he can call me out on my bullshit and he can call her out on her bullshit, and he can make us work together to work through issues and to improve communication, because it's all about communication, right? And you know, we are two very different people, and we communicate in two very different ways. So having a dedicated space where we can work on that is really important. But also just, you know, appreciating each other and understanding that, you know, that's, you know, we each have to kind of quite defined roles within the household, and one isn't easier than the other, and one isn't, you know, harder than the other, and that, you know, they're both challenging in different ways, and that appreciation for what each of us brings to the party is quite important as well.
Yeah, I actually absolutely love that, like, so much, especially because, like, I think it's coming, like, out of the, you know, societal norms of, like, seeing therapy as being like, oh, we're here to fix something, instead of, no, we're seeing therapy to optimize, like, what we're doing, which is really cool. May I ask some of the things that, like, maybe that you've worked through, that you've had some success with?
Yeah. So a lot, in terms of, I think a lot of it's all about communication and, you know, different methods of communication and different ways of communication. And for me, it's a case of, I'd say personality wise, I'm quite, bullish is probably the wrong word, but it's the one that first came to mind. you get stuck. I certainly get stuck in a way of, because I'm quite effective in a lot of areas of my life, that I kind of assume that effectiveness carries over into every aspect of my life. Mm-hmm. So that if I, you know, it's one of those ones where if I think it's right, or if I think my way is the best way, I kind of assume that as fact. Whereas obviously everybody has a different gauge on reality and a different gauge of how effective they are. So it's just about appreciating that every viewpoint is valid. Mm-hmm. And that, you know, that there's not more valid or less valid points of view, and that each opinion is equal and each value proposition is equal. So, you know, it's quite a hard thing to get my head around, but because I'm so used to just doing what I think is right.
Yeah. Do you have any examples?
Off the top of my head, no.
Yeah. I'm just sort of like, it's like an everyday thing, and sort of like a bit of a mindset shift.
Yeah, no, exactly. 99% of the work we do is about not individual circumstances, more just about that shift to a different way of thinking and a different way of being.
Yeah. Oh, for sure. So what do you think, like through doing that, are some of the biggest things that like either you've learned about yourself or that you've learned about your wife as well?
I would say that the sort of traditional roles that we assume are there to be challenged, and that you don't necessarily have to pigeonhole or box yourself into a category. And I think you can definitely sort of roles and relationships can definitely be a lot more fluid, and that responsibilities, you know, and things don't have to stay the way they are, if that makes sense. So things can all, and it comes from communication. Things can always be renegotiated at any point, right? So if something's not working, that it just needs to be communicated in the right way. And then that renegotiation needs to take place so that everybody's happy and that everybody, and maybe not everybody's happy, but everybody's aware of just, you know, the disconnect that's become there. So I think, you know, having that appreciation that things can change and things should change over time. And that constant flux of renegotiation, I think, is really important.
Yeah, I love how you've got that like every month as well, sort of to keep you accountable. Have you found...
We're coaches, right? So like, you know, I'm a professional coach. I coach people day in, day out. So it would be a bit rich if I, in areas in my life where I want to be more effective, I don't, you know, take coaching.
Yeah, that's so true. So have you found that any of the things that you've learned from that have like played on to other areas of your life with other people that you work with?
100%. As you said, part of the benefit of it is primarily the focus is on myself, my relationship and the family side of things, but it's also to do with shifting a mindset and shifting a way of thinking. I'd say probably the biggest challenge from my point of view is being a business owner and having, you know, a load of staff is to sit within that structure as sort of the managing director, the boss, but also to try and manage those relationships in an effective way. And I'd say that absolutely those things that I've learned in therapy and through going on courses and that sort of stuff, which absolutely benefit not only personally, but from a business point of view, from a management point of view as well.
Yeah, for sure. I can see that. So also, what do you think are some of the biggest things that you have learned in terms of actually running a successful business and getting business success?
Find good people.
Mm.
Find good people and reward good people.
Mm. How so?
And delegate. Seriously, like everybody has a skill set and everybody wants to feel a sense of ownership, or if they're good, they want to feel a sense of ownership. So, you know, you've got to be able to empower people to do their job in a really effective way. And that is for me, it's been to let go of the reins a little bit and let people find their way, to give them that structure in which they can really develop their own personal skill sets, but also drive the business forward in a way that they feel is right. As in, I wouldn't have hired them unless I thought they were good for the job, right? So it's a case of I think the worst thing you can do as a managing director is to micromanage people.
Hmm. How do you prevent yourself like from micromanaging people?
I genuinely remove myself from the process. I have a meeting. So with my key, it's about having a very clearly defined management structure. So I have a general, like for my clubs, I have a general manager and I have a sales manager. And then I have under them, I have a reception manager, and then I have a reception team. And then we have the training team. And if any of the trainers like see me around the gym and they ask me a question that is not my wheelhouse, like if it's, do you know where the ink for the printer is? I'll just be like, hey, my thing is, I'll just say, look, this is an opportunity for you to be great. Like, this is your opportunity to problem solve. This is your opportunity to be independent. This is your opportunity to grow. Go and find the ink yourself. That kind of thing. It's a little bit tongue in cheek.
Yeah.
With all my staff, I say, look, I'm always here for you guys. If ever you need anything, really, I'm here for you. But you know, if ever you need anything for work, there's someone you should go to that's not me.
Yeah, for sure. 100% agree with that. And I also like how you said, like, this is an opportunity to be great. I love those words, because like it comes like through your career, you've had all of these opportunities to be great on a bigger level. And you've done them, and you've taken like advantage of them, and you've gone through that, which I think is like really quite fantastic.
I say it a little bit tongue in cheek with a lot of my guys. I'm kind of taking the piss a little bit, but at the same time, I am wanting them to be fiercely, like, I think the people that take ownership of a situation and people that are fiercely independent within a situation and can find the answer themselves will be much more effective at their job than somebody that just always goes looking for an answer.
Mm-hmm.
So it's kind of like if it's a way for me to have a bit of fun with them, but to try and get them to be more effective in their job without hassling me, then that's a win-win for me.
Yeah, that's a bit of a bliss moment for sure. all right, so I think we're sort of coming towards the end of the podcast now. So I just sort of want to ask you one more question. And that is just like for anyone who does want to like sort of start like a successful business or have like a successful relationship, what do you think like is some tangible things that they could do within the next like week or month?
That's a good question. From a business point of view, I would say you can never be too prepared, but also you have to take the shots. As in, a lot of people wait until it's perfect, but you can really get a lot done just by starting. So, you know, a lot of people won't set up a business until they've ticked off, you know, until it feels like it's perfect and it's ready to go. Whereas, you know, the amount of businesses that don't get going because of that is enormous. Whereas a lot of the times it can almost like starting a business can feel quite overwhelming, but when you break it down into like just a to-do list and just tick it off. And what you'll find is like, you can write a list of all the things that need to get done. You can even, you know, speak to a mentor, speak to, a friend who's started a business, you know, and just say, hey, what do I need to do to start a business? And like, or go on Google, pull up a checklist, and then just work your way through it. And what you'll find is probably by the time you've finished, or you know, item one on the list, by the time you've done number 10, you probably want to redo item one because you would have found a way to improve it. And it kind of just goes and goes and goes. So things evolve, things change over time, and it's never going to be perfect. So just start. Like you can win it. You can win a game of American football with a 70% completion rate on your passing.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. So just throw it. Just throw it. if you make 60-70% of the right decisions, no one's going to care about the 40 that don't go to hand.
Oh, 100%. And also the second part to that would be definitely go to fitness shows and a nightclub in Lisbon. You might have a really
the actual real take home from that is just say yes.
Yeah, I like that.
You know what I mean? As in, like, I could have gone home because I was tired, but I was in Lisbon and I was with two blokes and they said, do you want to go out for a bite to eat? Yeah, why not? You know, some girl at my gym goes, do you want to compete in this show? I think you might be all right at it. Do you want to do it? Yeah, right. Just say yes. You never know what's going to come from it, right?
Yeah. Kind of seem like you're just having a little bit of fun, like with life while you're at it as well, not taking it too seriously.
Yeah. Take it seriously. Take it seriously, but just see where, you know, you never know where the next life-changing opportunity can come from.
Yeah. Take it seriously, but say yes.
Just say yes.
Yeah, I really like that. Well, thanks so much, man, for coming on to the show, sharing your stories, sharing your journey.
My pleasure.
I'm sure there's like, I'll write out all the stuff and I'll put all your links into, if anyone's listening, I'll put all of Sean's links into the podcast below. But before that, where can anyone else find you?
Just go on my OnlyFans, right?
Is that another thing that you just said yes to? You thought would be really good.
Hey, why not? I'd say most people, where can they find me? Probably Instagram and Facebook. So on Facebook, it's Sean Stafford Fitness. And on Instagram, it's just at Sean Stafford. That's probably the easiest place to find me and keep up to speed with what I'm getting up to. But appreciate everyone that's taken an hour out of their day to listen to me waffle on about a load of rubbish.
All right, man. Thanks so much for coming on, guys. And we'll see you in the next one.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Thank you so much for getting this far into the podcast. As a token of my appreciation for the loyal listeners, you can get a $50 discount of your first month inside the Set the Standard community. That'll help you double your business and reprogram your mind. We have 2 live group coaching calls per month, 8 modules and challenges, and an exclusive network where you can meet all the men who are setting the standard in here. Please use the code PODCAST, capital PODCAST, to get the first $50 off of your first month. Can't wait to see you guys in there.